Yeah, I was gonna ask.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. Muscles clad in black leather, incest, and murder. I'm Dave, joined by my black leather clad co-host, Mr. Ryan.
Sounds like just a regular Tuesday night for me.
It was either that or incestuous. I thought you would like the black leather more.
Yeah, I appreciate that more.
The tagline for this week, muscles clad in black leather, incest, and murder.
That's I like how,
hell of a weekend.
How you stress the murder part of that. That's no, Keith Morrison over here.
Hell of a weekend for me. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, you will receive a Movies on Up prize package that is full of love.
Clad in black leather.
You could almost call it loveful. If you're right and we pick you, you'll have that on the way. This week, Detroit releases In the Theaters, starring Anthony Mackie, John Boyega, Will Poulter, directed by Kathryn Bigelow, written by Mark Boal, who they're kind of on a tear of movies. I like Kathryn Bigelow. She's one of those directors that I'll see anything she does, because her filmography has kind of proven to me that, oh, you should watch everything
and
she does.
She doesn't have a giant filmography,
no.
But that classification of a director that I'll see anything she does probably happened pretty early on in that filmography.
Yeah, and she's only got 9 major credits to her name. If we were to do our top 5, they would pretty much be the same 5, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Maybe one different. So we thought, let's not do a top 5. We're going to go chronologically. We're going to take a look at Kathryn Bigelow's whole career, because I pretty much have stuff to say about every movie of hers. So even if I had a top 5, I'd probably have 4 also-rans. She kind of broke onto the scene in 1981 with The Loveless, co-directed this with Monty Montgomery, co-wrote and co-directed with it. So she wasn't flying solo on this one. Monty Montgomery had had kind of a career building up to then. Stars Willem Dafoe as a biker who they stop in a small town. It involves, there's murder, there's incest, there's leather. I saw this movie, but it's been decades.
I've never seen this movie.
So it's,
but I'm going to be honest with you. Now I'm interested.
Now you're interested. Yeah.
Yep.
It's Willem Dafoe.
Yep.
And Kathryn Bigelow.
Sure.
That was 81.
I would watch a Willem Dafoe, Kathryn Bigelow movie tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
And I might. It's just going to be The Loveless.
Yeah.
Head to the old Blockbuster and pick that one off the shelf.
So that's when, that was her, technically her directorial debut, but written and directed with Monty Montgomery. Her true Let's Fly solo came in 1987, and it's a hell of a debut. It is written by her, co-written by Mark Redd, starring Adrian Pasdar, Lance Henriksen, Bill Paxton, Jenny Wright. It is Near Dark. When it came out in 85, it didn't do great. It ended with about $3.4 million at the box office on a $5 million budget, which $5 million budget for essentially a first-time director, not bad. In the 80s. For this kind of movie, the fact that she could do it for, I mean, granted, $5 million goes a lot further in 87 than it does now, but it's a pretty ambitious movie for a $5 million budget.
I think people put it in the, rightfully so, I mean, it is one of the better vampire movies to come out of the 1980s, but I actually don't think of it as a vampire movie.
It feels so much bigger than that.
To me, it's a Western. Instead of kidnapping bandidos, you have kidnapping vampiros. What she did with the makeup effects in that movie was really special. I mean, there's some charred looking vampires that look awfully, awfully cool, and that's 100% special effects makeup.
Bill Paxton,
phenomenal. Was his usual intense Bill Paxton 80s self. Lance Henriksen, those two guys, if they were in a movie in the 80s, and if it was a horror movie, one of them alone would be enough to make me watch it, but both of them together is fascinating. And it has probably the best use of farm machinery in movie history, I dare say. This was not the first Kathryn Bigelow movie I watched. I did come back to it when I got more into horror movies, and specifically even 80s horror movies. And while I do think it's a bit of a cult movie, it certainly has gained popularity over the years. I think it's still an underappreciated one from this kind of director that more people haven't gone back to watch.
Yeah, I mean, if I I think if you hear Near Dark, especially if you're into horror movies, it feels like a classic 80s horror movie because it is. It's a Western. It's a right. vampire movie. It's a horror movie. Like, it's a lot of stuff, but it's really, really good.
I don't think it gets the Lost Boys love, and it's better
no,
than the Lost
it's
Boys.
It's way better than Lost Boys. And I love the Lost right. Boys. It's a different movie for sure, but it took a while to find its audience. It wasn't a box office success, but it's 30 years later. There are still people seeing Near Dark for the first time. There are still people going back and revisiting Near Dark for the 50th time. It holds up. It's a lasting movie. And for essentially a first-time solo director, that's a damn fine debut to make. You could do worse than Near Dark. After Near Dark, you compared it to a Western or claimed mm-hmm. it was a Western.
I stand by that claim.
No, and it is, and it is. And I'm only setting up the comparison I'll make here. Working with Eric Red again, she co-wrote with Eric Red and directed 1990's Blue Steel, which is Jamie Lee Curtis, Ron Silver, Clancy Brown, Elizabeth Pena, Philip Bosco, Kevin Dunn, Richard Jenkins. Like, it's a hell of a cast for a second movie. Mm-hmm. Jamie Lee Curtis is a rookie cop that ends up taking on a sociopath, and it's a really, really good movie. I was only 11 when this came out, but I remember seeing it in the theaters twice. To go back and visit it now, it's fitting that it stars Jamie Lee Curtis, but that's not the only reason I compare it to this. It's a cop movie that feels like a slasher movie. It feels like Halloween from a cop's perspective, which you don't really see. You see the slasher movies from a kid's perspective.
Right, from Laurie Strode, yeah. Jamie Lee Curtis.
But this, it's a rookie cop. The killer is deranged and downright scary. So it has those horror elements. On the surface, it just looks like a standard 90s cop movie, though, which we got a lot of. Like, I think of Striking Distance and Lethal Weapons and all those. Yeah. Like, but to me, it's so much more than that. And almost, we're not super far into her filmography yet, but I feel like this is where she's most comfortable, or this is what she's made to do. Like, I feel like if you watch Blue Steel, it feels like the type of movie Kathryn Bigelow is made to do, because it is something that on the surface it just looks like a cop movie, but there's so much more to it. Just like on the surface Near Dark's a vampire movie,
right?
There's
yeah.
a lot more to it.
Her movies do tend to, they're tough to put in a box of this is a war movie, this is a surfing movie. They do kind of tend to have some other things, an undercurrent, if you will.
And this one, it made $8.2 million at the box office. I couldn't find the budget, but I doubt it was more than $5 million. It got a great cast, got a great performance of them. It was decently reviewed, but this one, I think, took a couple of years to come out. In the time looking for work, she happened to be married to a man named James Cameron, a director in his own right, who was producing a movie called Point Break, and they had had a couple directors drop out. It was supposed to be a Ridley Scott
movie.
Heard
of him as well.
Yeah, but when Ridley Scott was out, the ball kind of fell to Kathryn Bigelow.
The football fell
yes,
to Kathryn Bigelow.
Right from Johnny Utah to Kathryn Bigelow. And if you've ever heard the show, you know that 1991's Point Break is one of my favorite movies. I love everything about it. And a large part of that is Kathryn Bigelow. This was my first Bigelow joint. Or no, I guess I would have seen it after Blue Steel, but I didn't really realize that Blue Steel was a Bigelow joint until looking back on it.
Once people realized who Kathryn Bigelow was, I think this was the first movie people made the connection to was, oh my God, the lady that made The Hurt Locker is the same lady that
Point
made
Break.
Point Break. The same lady that directed Jessica Chastain also directed Keanu Reeves into
Patrick
saying,
Swayze.
I am an FBI agent. I don't have the love for Point Break than you do. I don't hate it. I think it's entertaining, mostly in the same way that a dumpster fire is entertaining. But this movie isn't a dumpster fire. On the surface, it's a dumb movie about two idiots that form a bond playing cat and mouse, the mouse or the cat, however you want to put it. What could have been an excuse to just shoot a dumb action movie with plenty of extreme adrenaline sports stunts, she actually turns into a good, albeit bro-centric action movie.
Nothing about this movie on paper works.
Right.
Patrick Swayze was kind of, he's a big deal at this point. Keanu Reeves was starting already to become a punchline.
Busey
was...
Not the punchline he would become.
Not the punchline. And then Lori Petty, it was, but at the time. And then you take a story about, there's surfers that are robbing banks, and he's going undercover with surfers. Nothing about that works until Catherine Bigelow gets her hands on it and gets a really good performance out of Swayze as Bodhi, a really good performance out of Lori Petty as this not damsel in distress. Like, she's a woman in control of everything she's doing. Like, she's into Bodhi. Oh, not into him anymore. I'm just going to this dude. Into him, makes this connection over her parents. Like, Lori Petty's kind of her own vehicle in this movie, and she does it really, really well. And then Busey's good. The action is great. It's paced well. It gets to a point where you care about the story. You care about what's...
And there is one.
There is one. And there's twists, there's turns. You start to care about what's going on. You like the bromance between Bodhi and Utah. And part of you wants to forget, these are really bad people.
That one of them is a criminal and he should go to jail.
It's his job to stop them. So on paper, nothing works. But it's 26 years later, and I don't think you can meet anybody that doesn't know what Point Break is. So I would say it's an iconic movie. People know, maybe they don't have the love for it that I do, but they know what Point Break is. And you don't get that by accident. Like, you don't stand the test of time over 26 years if you're not doing something right. And this is one of those where everything seemed to click. And she pulled the right buttons. She pushed the right switches. Like, everything she did worked in this movie. The action is shot great. It's got one of the best foot chase scenes to this day. I love the foot chase scene where he throws the dog. That's great. He jumps out of an airplane without a parachute. That won an MTV Movie Award. Or it was at least nominated. I don't know. It's my favorite movie scene ever. And that was the reason I watched this back-to-back in the theater, because I wanted to see that scene again. Just... He just jumps after him without a parachute, and I love it. And it's shot so well, and there's so much well done about this movie that I get that people don't love it like I do. I understand that, but you know what it is. And it's her third solo directing credit, and I would consider this and Near Dark as iconic movies. You're 2 for 3 so far, and I think Blue Steel...
And Blue Steel wasn't bad.
I think Blue Steel was... Technically, I believe it was better than Point Break, which is blasphemous for me to say. But for the average moviegoer, I think Blue Steel is a better movie. So between 87 and 91, you have Near Dark, Blue Steel, and Point Break. She does not work again until 1995 with another movie that's very, very close to my heart, Strange Days.
Another collaboration with James Cameron.
This one he wrote. She came on to direct. And what's interesting about this one is where we talk about Point Break and how on paper that doesn't work. Nothing about Point Break works. But then Point Break ended up doing $43 million domestically, another $40 million worldwide on a $24 million budget. So it was a certified hit. Like, it was a blockbuster. Strange Days, due to having an $80 million movie, she gets a $45 million budget for Strange Days, the sci-fi political thriller.
A film noir couched in a sci-fi movie.
Written by James Cameron, who, at this point, big deal.
Yeah.
With the cast of Ralph Fiennes, Angela Bassett, Tom Sizemore, Michael Wincott, Vincent D'Onofrio, Juliette Lewis, Mi-Fi Me, William Fichtner. Like, that's an awesome cast. I would expect much more from this cast than Keanu Reeves, Lori Petty, Patrick Swayze. So on paper, everything should work. I think technically, it's a better movie than Point Break. I think Strange Days is a great movie.
It's wonderfully made. This is another one. I mentioned in the Luc Besson episode how some people kind of either love or you hate The Fifth Element. I think Strange Days is a bit like that too. Some people, it just doesn't work for them. They don't like the movie. And I realized that some of the performances in it are a little bit, I don't know what the right word is. Stiff just kind of keeps coming to mind, but I don't know that that's exactly how I want to put it. It doesn't feel like they work together.
Juliette Lewis is Juliette Lewis. She's never been great. She is, I think, the weak point in this. Angela Bassett is very stiff and straightforward, but I think that's the character. I love this movie. I own it on VHS. It's one of those that there are certain movies I own. I talked about it in Luke Besson episode where my life is better because I know that I own it on VHS. Like, after nuclear apocalypse, like, cockroaches and VHS tapes are the only
and
two things.
And the magnetized videotapes yes. are what survives.
That's
yeah.
all that's going to survive. So I'll still be able to watch Big Blue and Strange Days. I think I own it two or three different versions on VHS. Through high school, like, when this came out in 95, this is one that I watched weekly, and that's not exaggerating. I still watch it at least two or three times a year. It's a great movie, and the cast, Ralph Fiennes is good. I think he carries the movie good because he's this, not a hero, he's a bad guy, just in a...
He's an anti-hero.
Yeah, in a crap situation. The story, I think, is great. D'Onofrio and Fichtner are awesome villains. The setup unfolds at a perfect pace. Like, going in, you don't really know what the movie is. You know, she used some first-person stuff.
The drug stuff.
She used some first-person stuff in yeah. Point Break during the chases and stuff. And then in this, you have a whole plot device around first-person.
Which could have been gimmicky.
But she made it work.
Right, as an excuse to, all right, well, let's figure out how we can make this a found footage movie. Or let's figure out how we can put first-person into this. Yeah, she did it well in Strange Days.
And how the whole plot unfolds. It's a very political movie. Like, it is a political thriller. It's a sci-fi movie. It's an action movie. Like, some of the action is pretty intense, like with the flaming limousine underwater. It's a great movie. As much as I love Point Break, because Point Break holds this spot in my heart, I think Strange Days is such a well-made movie, and I do not understand the failure that it was. With everything working for it, that $45 million budget made $8 million at the box office. I mean, it was a spectacular failure.
Yes, epic fail.
I mean, it came out in 95. It was a futuristic movie that took place in 1999. Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe people weren't ready to suspend that disbelief. But it was a cool take on the future because it was futuristic, but not flying cars futuristic. I could go on and on about how much I love this movie. Like, even Tom Sizemore, who's traditionally not good, is pretty good for what he does in this. The tacked-on love with Angela Bassett and Ralph Fiennes, I think, is the only thing that maybe I don't like about it. But it's just such a good movie. And I think Ralph Fiennes is really good as this just lovesick idiot criminal, pretty much. After Strange Days, she didn't do anything until... The Weight of Water came out in 2000. It debuted at festivals in 2000, but I don't think it got a wide release until 01 or 02.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of years later. Limited release in 2002. I saw it later on DVD. I think it was somewhere in my Sarah Pauly phase. Like, I'll just get on kicks where I'll just see an actress. And it was probably in the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead movie where I was like, oh, Sarah Pauly. She's pretty capable in that movie. I wonder what else she's done. And it turns out she's done a lot. She's been around for quite a long time, though she hasn't worked a ton lately. But I kind of settled on Weight of Water as a movie to go back and watch because I was like, oh, Kathryn Bigelow directed it. All right, we'll give that a look. Sean Penn's in it. It had a pretty decent cast to it. And one of the things that I really kind of enjoyed and is memorable about this movie is it's about basically two crimes that take place centuries apart. And again, where the gimmicky stuff she did in Strange Days was first person, I guess the gimmicky thing here is flashback. And a good part of the movie, Sarah Pauly's part of the movie, takes place 100 years or whenever it is before...
1873.
Sure, yeah. So, hell, more than 100 years before Sean Penn's part. And you get to see that unfold. And I think she's really good in the flashback stuff. Penn's good in it. I mean, obviously, he's good, so it's not really surprising. Yeah, she shows up, and I just thought it was an interesting device to be in a crime movie, essentially, where it's sort of a mystery. It's a investigation kind of movie, but you do get to see a lot in flash, an entire story, basically, in flashback. It's not a scene or two. It's, you know, as it almost, to me, felt like a bit of a video game as you piece together more clues, as we piece together more clues, you get to see more of the story that happened previously. So I thought that was an interesting device that could have made a really difficult movie to follow, but I didn't find that to be the case.
I think this is her weakest. It's good. She gets good performances. She does avoid it being gimmicky. I don't think it's great, though. This is probably the only one that I would not watch again, or I don't speak highly of. And I don't think it ever got a wide release. It only made less than $300K on a $16 million budget. So it was a smaller movie, but it was $16 million in 2000, which is probably on par with the $5 million of 87. Yeah. But, I mean, not a box office success. Took a while to come out. It was based on a novel, so she didn't write it. And then in 2002, she did get that money back. She was trusted with a big budget again when she did K-19, The Widowmaker. But did not work out that great for her, as she took a $100 million budget and made $19 domestically at the box office. So, technically a bomb. This, I think, is her most... It's weird to say that when a director has done Point Break. I feel like this is her most Hollywood movie, if that makes sense. It doesn't feel like a Kathryn Bigelow movie. It feels like a studio movie, which I don't feel like her other movies felt like studio movies. I felt like she had the reins on her.
It's a Harrison Ford vehicle, which it absolutely was. You throw Liam Neeson in there, who's been a well-established movie star at that point. And then you have the story of this actual submarine, this Russian sub. She did it well. Like, it was a well-made submarine movie, and they all have the same basic intrigue to them, whether it's this or Hunt for Red October or Das Boot. Go down the litany, U-571, of submarine movies, basically any of the ones that come to mind. And they're not vastly different, because there's only so much you can do with a submarine. But I think she did a great job of playing off the two leads against each other with Ford and with Liam Neeson. And the story may not be something that interests everyone. It's basically this Russian nuclear sub, through bad engineering, just bad luck, and in my opinion, the captain being somewhat of an idiot, almost blew up a nuclear sub off the coast of New York, which would have caused a nuclear war. It didn't, spoiler alert, so I don't know what the stakes are, because it's not a war movie. I don't know if that drags people in. Did this movie need to have a budget of $100 million? No. Why it was
Harrison
given...
Harrison Ford in 2002.
Is he worth $50 million? Because I don't know the budget needed to be $50 million. I don't get it for that. I mean, it was a well-made submarine movie, but I think there's certainly a ceiling for well-made submarine movies.
Yeah.
It's probably around $35 million.
Is it? It doesn't feel like a Kathryn Bigelow movie. Like, all the great things.
It's well-directed.
It is well-directed, but it doesn't have that extra panache that she has on it, where she avoids the gimmick in Weight of Water and Strange Days, where she makes things that don't work work great in Point Break. Not really mixing genres like she does so well. And then things take a turn.
A turn for the better.
Her next feature is released in 2008, written by Mark Boal. It is The Hurt Locker.
You may have heard of it.
Made on a $15 million budget. Made $17 million at the box office. So, you know, it's a smaller movie, makes smaller amount of money. But the success in this one is not in the box office.
Won 6 Oscars.
It won Oscars for Best Picture and Best Director. Mm-hmm. The first and, to this day, the only female to win Best Director, even though Ava DuVernay should have a couple years ago. Mark Boal won for screenplay. Also won for film editing, sound mixing. Got Jeremy Renner nominated for Best Actor. Mm-hmm. Was also nominated for cinematography and music. And then it got Golden Globe noms for picture, director, and screenplay. Did not win any Golden Globes, but got the
Oscars. They had the last laugh.
Yeah, and oddly enough, it was just a fun storyline that year, because the big movie that year was Avatar, which became the highest grossing movie ever,
yes.
Who was directed by who?
Some guy named Jim, I think.
Her ex-husband, James Cameron, who was also up for Best Picture and Best Director. So to go,
Sam Worthington not nominated for Best Actor.
No, because people saw the movie. That's how I say that. I still haven't seen Avatar.
It's on TV a lot now.
I like the idea of this big time, big budget, highest grossing movie ever versus $17 million at the box office, $15 million budget, smaller story. This is the war movie that people go in expecting a war movie. It's a different kind of war movie. Jeremy Renner is a bomb tech.
It takes place during a war, but I feel like it has far more to do with
after the war.
Right. His how he integrates into society after the war than it does with him in the suit.
It's a great character study, and it's a shame. Off the top of my head, I don't know who won in 08, but Renner had a good case. His whole job in the Middle East is finding bombs, being the only person that goes up to that bomb and defuses it. You have to become a certain type of person who won in 08.
That would be the dude.
Oh.
Crazy Heart.
Crazy Heart. Yeah, I'd still give it to Renner. You have to become a certain type of person to do that. And this is a nice study of, can you turn that off? Can you go from being this guy who's there's lives at stake, you're on an island trying to defuse this bomb, to picking out cereal?
Right. The grocery store scene is phenomenal.
That's what I think of every time. Because of that scene, it deserves every award. And just this, you think of soldiers as just counting down the days until they come home. But in a lot of cases, that's who they become. Like, that's who they are. It's not a job to them. And to do what they do, you can't treat it as a 9-to-5. Like, you have to become that type of person. And when you do that, not everybody can turn it off. And that's where the Hurt Locker excelled so much, is that he got what we think that every soldier wants. He's home. He can enjoy life. But he can't.
He goes from a position where you're going to die. You know what I mean? Like, the odds are against you. Defusing these bombs, something's going to go wrong. You're going to end up dead. A job where your time is basically marked. It's like playing Russian roulette every time you go out there. And you would think, yes, that you would feel this giant sense of relief going back to a safe environment, which is your home. And that felt more alien to Renner. And he was phenomenal in this movie.
So good. At this point, he's kind of, he's been around for a while. He was in Senior Trip, and he's been, but he's always been that guy that was in that movie.
Right.
Whereas now Jeremy Renner is Jeremy Renner. Up until here, he was a guy you'd seen in stuff.
Oh, that guy in SWAT.
Yeah. He'd been seen in stuff, but you weren't really sure who he was.
And then everyone knew exactly who he was because he, I guess, follows the long line of Catherine Bigelow leads. I trace that lineage back to Bodie and Johnny Utah. I mean, I think Renner puts up a performance that's right up there in that pantheon.
Yeah. The Hurt Locker was good, deserved every award that it got. She used that momentum. 2012.
That's a pretty good
back-to-back.
Yeah, yeah.
Teamed up with Mark Boll again for Zero Dark Thirty. This time got a bigger budget, a $40 million budet, raked in $96 million at the box office. This one found success at the box office and with awards. It was nominated again for Best Picture. Jessica Chastain was nominated for Best Actress, got another writing and editing nomination. It won for sound editing. And then for the Golden Globes, it got Best Picture, Director, and Screenplay noms. And then Jessica Chastain won. This was a tough year because this was the Jennifer Lawrence, was this American Hustle?
Silver Linings. Yeah.
And it was one of those where, like, in any other year, either one of these is the clear-cut runaway winner. I thought it was so close that either one of these should have won. But it's hard to argue Jennifer Lawrence in that movie.
The one that I
like Chastain more.
The one that I would argue is her not getting a sniff for director, which was tough. You had Silver Linings, David O. Russell, Steven Spielberg for Lincoln. Beast of the Southern Wild was that year, so I love the fact that that got some love. And then you're down to Amour and the guy that won
Life of Pi, was that year?
The year Ang Lee won, which certainly that's the best cinematography. Hands down, send the kids to bed, jury's out.
Because I feel like this was a better directing job than The Hurt Locker. Not to take away from The Hurt Locker. Hurt Locker was great.
Yeah.
There was a lot more at play here. Whereas Hurt Locker was Renner and pretty much every scene.
A smaller character study of
this is a big thing, and Jessica Chastain is going from set piece to set piece, through cast to cast. But there's a scene where they're all around a table It's Gandolfini. It's Jessica Chastain. Jason Clarke is there. You get some of these great, intense, powerful actors under this great director. And all they're doing is sitting at a table and talking. But it is one of the most amazing, intense scenes ever, just because of the power of these actors being given the freedom to use that power. And it's so great. And that's what sticks out. Then you have Chris Pratt, his abs. This is the transition into superstar.
I think people have done to forget that he was in this movie, though.
He's a small part.
Yeah.
He was in this and Moneyball, like, back to back, leading up to Star-Lord. And
right.
This one, he has legit abs. But it's a good movie. I really like this movie. I like it more than The Hurt Locker. And I love The Hurt Locker. It was a tougher job than The Hurt Locker, I think. There was so much.
That's a story you kind of have to get right.
Yeah.
Zero Dark Thirty.
And it was close enough that people remember that.
People remember where they were when Obama came on the TV and said they had got bin Laden. Remember watching that on CNN or whatever you watched it on. The Hurt Locker was a story that could have been a lot of guys' stories, but I didn't experience that in the way that I did it from my living room experience. The news coverage of the SEAL Team 6 going in, there was kind of a lot riding on that, in that it is such an important story for people that are our age that lived through 9/11, were around watching that news coverage. And then, not that after they killed bin Laden there was some kind of closure to that arc, but it was a giant touchstone in it. So for our time, that's a big story to handle, and I think she did a fantastic job with it.
And Jessica Chastain in this movie is phenomenal. I like Chastain in pretty much everything she's done. I think she commands the screen. This one, she really given the reins to run with it, and it's her movie. It's got this phenomenal cast, but it's 100% her movie, and she delivers.
And she had done good stuff before. I mean, Take Shelter was before this. She was actually really...
That was Michael. She had
But she was good in that. She was good in The Help. She had a relatively small-ish role in that. But after this, there's absolutely no question that she can and ought to lead more movies. I mean, Interstellar, she had a good part in. Most Violent Year, which is a terrible movie, she was great in. The Martian, Crimson Peak, which I enjoyed an awful lot.
Husband, Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah. So
this
she's
year, Miss Sloan. Well, last year was Miss Sloan, and then Zookeeper's Wife this year. Like, she's one of those that I'll watch in anything. Like, I love her, and this is her at her best. And then this week, Catherine Bigelow back, teamed up with Mark Boll for Detroit. Another true story, another real, like, she's kind of found that niche.
Right, yeah.
Which, I compare her to Danny Boyle. Danny Boyle made Slumdog Millionaire, won an Oscar, then turned into making these, like, Oscar-type movies, and then he returned with Trance, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
I want Bigelow to, if Detroit does well and Detroit gets nominations, which... it's coming out in August, so who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe it's not as big of a success, so she does get to go back and do something smaller. I would love to get her back to writing. I would love to see this established Catherine Bigelow do a Blue Steel. Like, I would love to see her make a smaller, intimate, written movie that she's written herself.
She has no writing credits since 96, which is a TV movie. But yeah. Blue Steel and Near Dark, she wrote both of those, as well as The Loveless. So yeah, it's just something that she hasn't done an awful lot of recently.
I want to see her passion project. You had two Oscar movies, and then maybe Detroit doesn't do as well. What's she do with the $10 to $15 million budget? Like, what kind of movie does she write and direct?
Yes, the answer is whatever she wants at this
point. She's got the Bo Bergdahl movie coming. She's doing a movie on Bo Bergdahl is next. That'll be interesting, I think. Like, that's an interesting enough story.
Right.
And it's another one of those that's pretty
But I think that's
recent.
Along the, yeah, Zero Dark Thirty, where that's such a story that people know.
So it's ambitious.
Yeah. Along to your point about writing, like, I would like to see her go and do something original. Whether it's her writing or somebody else's, I would like to see her do an original story that isn't necessarily grounded in something that's ripped out of the headlines. But she's at a point in her career where she can do whatever she wants. Any movie that is without a director would be fortunate to have Catherine Bigelow sign on. So she's got that kind of cachet to pick and choose.
Yeah, it's tough because I'd like to see her write something small and do. But I'd like to see her do something like a Star Wars movie or a superhero movie because she's so good. She's one of those that I will see a Kathryn Bigelow movie. The Hurt Locker didn't seem interesting to me. Loved it. Zero Dark Thirty didn't seem interesting because I don't really like those moments in history once, especially when I remember the history. Right. Loved it. Detroit, I'm kind of amped.
That cast.
That I cast mean, is phenomenal.
I'm a big fan of John Boyega. Oh, I love him. Like, as a human being.
I watched 10 minutes of Attack the Block today just because I had 10 minutes to kill. I knew I couldn't watch the whole thing, but I just wanted that. I've loved him since that movie. Will Poulter is a bad guy. I think is going to be great.
Yeah, I love.
He put Anthony Mackie on the screen.
Jack Rayner, who was in one of my favorites from, I think
Transformers
it was,
4?
No. One of my favorites from last year, Sing Street. I love that movie.
Is that the guy from Transformers 4?
Yes. I did not see that one, but I love me some Sing Street. I love me some Jack Rayner. That is a really, really, really good cast. Anthony Mackie, of course, who's, I don't want to
put him on a screen and I'll watch
Yeah,
it.
Put him on a screen. He does well in Kathryn Bigelow movies. He was great in Hurt Locker
as
well.
Oh, he was really good. No, I love him. So I'm excited for Detroit. I hope it does well. Mm-hmm. Whether it has the award love, I don't know. But I hope it does well just because I like her. Next week, we come back with Annabelle probably comes out. One of those horror movies comes out. And it's directed by the guy who did Lights Out. So we're going to watch Lights Out. Ryan has seen it and liked it. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm going to watch it.
Hopefully by the time we record, you will remedy that.
Yeah, so that's coming up. And we're in August already, which is insane. This year's going fast. October's right around the corner. It'll be fun.
We got some plans.
We're
going to
do something
already.
A little different this year for October, which will be fun. So if you think about it, email us your favorite horror movies. 10, 20, 5, doesn't matter.
50, whatever you want to say.
Just email us your favorite. Make a list of your favorite horror movies. Go as far as you want and send them to us because I'd love to see those. Next week, we'll be back with Lights Out. Week after that, we're doing another director episode, but this will be more of a traditional list. Another one of my favorite directors who I'll watch anything that puts out, Steven Soderbergh. I haven't plugged it this year. I want to do that real quick. Createdweekly.com. Check it out every Friday. Last year in 2016, I wrote a short story every week. Well, my buddy Fred did a poem. This year, me and a handful of other people are drawing a picture every week. So that's fun. I'm not expecting you to read anything. Just go and look at a handful of pictures every Friday on createdweekly.com because usually I'm out of ideas, so I just draw on whatever movie or trailer I saw that week. So I draw some movie-related stuff. But check that out. And until next week.
Keep it up.